Leaders are all around us, at all times, and in every area of our lives. They motivate. They risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. Today, Nancy Grayson, founder and recently retired superintendent of the Rappaport Academy. Hosting the conversation is Liz Taylor. This program was taped May 22, 2012, in the studios of KWBU.
Welcome to KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Liz Taylor, and I'm talking today with Nancy Grayson. So, Nancy, it's great fun to have you here, and I've actually really been looking forward to this because I don't know you very well, but I know of you very well. Oh, wait, that's scary.
Well,
isn't it?
Delightful to be here. It is. I'm looking forward to our conversation
today.
That's
great. And we are just going to have a conversation, and I've got, like I said, some topics that I'm going to throw out. But we're not, we're not bound by any fetters in that. So
makes it much more fun.
Yeah. So we're just going to talk. So, but we do actually want to start talking about your background. Including where you're from, a little about your family, or any useful dreams and ambitions, just anything you would want to share about that.
Interesting. Well, I was born in Atlanta, Georgia. Okay. So I lived the first half of my school age years in Decatur and went to a very small school system, and we walked to school a mile a day, and wow. All the tales of, it's snowing and you walk in the snow. And we did that, but we did it as groups in the neighborhood, so it was fun. And I have one sister who's a little older than I am. And we kind of lived up in a woodsy area, which was a real benefit for growing up. I was a tomboy, and
I believe that
we ran and played cowboys and Indians, because back in the day, that's what you played, and it wasn't about political correctness.
Sure.
It was simply about having fun. We captured lightning bugs in Coke bottles, mm-hmm. so we could make our own flashlights at night.
Yeah.
You know, when you imagine, you can do all things.
Absolutely.
And so life was for me growing up. Life was very much about investigating and curiosity and outdoors and enjoying and breathing well.
Okay.
And we moved to Houston, which for me was quite devastating.
Oh.
to be kind of dragged out of such a comfort zone.
Sure.
In the sixth grade.
Okay, I was going to ask what age.
Sixth grade, so, and yeah. Left for Houston.
It's a pivotal time.
It was.
In any child's
life. It was, especially when you know everybody in town.
Sure.
And you move to this giant, gargantuan
mm-hmm.
city with lots of traffic. And
oh,
we
wow.
moved to Houston. And then I went to Bel Air High School, which was an academically strong school. Public, and on to Southwestern University in Georgetown, following my sister, not knowing any different than to
sure.
follow her off, and majored in French and English with a couple of minors, too, and got a teaching certificate and accomplished that in 4 years, because you didn't take longer than 4 years.
Right.
You said that wasn't the way you did things.
Yeah.
And met my husband while we were in college, and we married after I got out of college, which he was 1 year into graduate school at that point. So that's kind of where I'm from and
sure.
and a little bit of my growing up.
So how did you wind up in Waco?
Well, when Bob finished a residency in okay. Dallas, we'd been there for 7 years, and he had offers in the Dallas area, and we looked at traffic patterns and life expectancies.
I love it.
And we decided it might not be very healthy for him if we stayed in Dallas, and he worked 72 hours straight and then had to get on the freeway.
Oh, there you go.
And so he had some criteria, and I had some criteria, and we ended up in Waco by choice. We had not gone to school here. We had no family here. We knew nothing about Waco.
And when was that?
And that was 1978.
Wow.
And he said, putting the formula in, lake within the city, a university in the city, all kinds of things like no traffic and a hospital that needed them and things like that. So when you dump all those factors in, he said, well, Waco's the answer. And I said, in all honesty, I am so open-minded, Bob. I am happy to go visit Waco. Just realize we will never move there.
Oh, no.
And we came for a weekend and absolutely knew it was home.
Oh, wow.
And we've been here since 1978, and we have never looked back and never wished we were in another place.
That's great. That's a great story.
Yeah, so here we are. Go figure.
That's a great story.
But when you see Waco from the highway, I-35, especially back in the 70s with all the construction, however, that seems to continue.
Yes, of course it does. It's a cyclical thing.
You don't really see anything of Waco. Mm-hmm. So when we did come and stay for the weekend and really got to know better parts of Waco and what it's really like and the open-mindedness and the diversity, it was very much home.
That's great. That's a great story.
We raised two children here, two daughters, who are successful women now, who followed non-traditional female paths. One is a science teacher, and one is an architect.
Oh, wow.
So Waco helped us do that. We're very grateful
to the
community of Waco.
That's great. That's wonderful. So you are a community leader.
Well, that's arguable.
No, it's not arguable. It is absolute. You are recognized in this community as a community leader, and there's a lot of admiration that goes your way, goes your direction, because you have done and continue to do some very amazing things in this community and influence a lot of people. And I think that's just totally awesome to take a phrase that people younger than me use, but it is totally awesome. So I have to ask, who has had the greatest influence on you as a leader?
Somehow I knew that question would come about, and the answer is very complex.
Okay, that's great.
That I have never been exposed to a singular leader who has had an impact on me. I'm a watcher, and I'm a listener, and I'm a learner, and I have a passion for learning. So over time, I think it's been an absorption of who's doing what in good ways, who's doing what in ineffective ways, how could they do it differently, and watching and thinking and learning. I don't believe that I ever sought leadership. I instead am a reactor and a doer. And if
that's
what
leads
to some sense of leadership, so be it. But I don't think of myself as a leader. I have a real disdain for leadership that equates with power.
Sure.
And people who seek power by becoming leaders, it's very uncomfortable for me.
Sure. Sure.
And so when I'm called a leader, I always think, ooh, does that mean someone thinks there's power attached? Because that is not me.
Well, there may be, in my opinion, there may be power attached. But I believe that power is comes from the person who is attaching it, not necessarily from you, the leader.
Well, that's a good thought.
Yeah.
It's a perception.
If someone perceives you as being a powerful person and maybe a threat or whatever, then that's their
tenacious
perception.
Is probably a better word for me than powerful.
I think it's an excellent word for you.
I am extraordinarily tenacious and very determined.
Yes.
Because when I go for a task in any way, as a follower or as a leader or someone who initiates an idea, I think I am very much personally impassioned, and so there's a lot of energy that comes from that impassionment that just drives things forward. So when I think about people who have had an impact, I think it's more situational.
That's great.
And I grew up in a very constricted area of the country, given the 1950s and 60s. Where I looked at what was going on, and I felt discomfort as a child. And so it was an interesting thing to observe and wonder and be curious.
And be curious and wonder...
Why?
Why and should this be changed?
And when.
Yeah.
Why and when? That really was more of it. I was raised by a very much so during the day by a lady named Fanny Gutter. And Fanny taught me. No, she was African American.
Okay.
And she taught me the true essence of caring and unconditional love as a person, not for what you do, but for who you are inside.
Oh, wow.
And so that was such a juxtaposition to what was going on in my community in terms of the affinity and the fondness between the races.
That's amazing. For those of you who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Liz Taylor, and I'm enjoying a wonderful conversation with Nancy Grayson. That was pretty powerful.
It always has been. I think it drove me along the way, energized me. I should use the word energized.
Sure.
To learn a lot more about people. And after having children and doing various jobs, I mean, I've done a lot of jobs, like shoveling manure at Astroworld when it opened the first year, and that was in high school, to designing children's clothes at the Apparel Marts, New York, Dallas,
wow,
and Atlanta. So I have this real diverse background. And then I started teaching at Vanguard here in town at the high school. I taught AP Advanced Placement Psychology. And that taught me something very important, and that was that I certainly didn't know enough.
Okay.
I was a certified psychology teacher through the Texas system, but I certainly didn't know enough. So I got a master's.
Did that scare you?
No, it excited me.
Okay.
It's that curiosity that drives
sure.
me. I grew up in a household with an inventor and a musician.
Okay.
So it's all about curiosity, and it's all about innovation. And so I was driven to know more and more and more so I could do a better job. So I went to Baylor, got a master's degree in psych, and discovered that there is nothing more powerful than learning.
Absolutely.
And so then I went down to A&M and got a PhD in psychology and studied social psychology.
Okay.
Individual in the context of a group.
There you go.
And so so many of the things that I've done over time have led to different paths.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe in pathways. I do. So my life is a choice among pathways. And everyone's is.
I think everyone is that.
Everyone's is.
Has that. So what do you think are the most important decisions that leaders make?
Ooh, that's an excellent question. I think leaders have to make a conscious decision about their style of leadership. And that style should be dictated or based on the group or the goal of the group for which they are taking a leadership role. I think there are different ways to lead.
Yes.
To get results. So I think leaders have to decide that. I think one of the most powerful things a leader must decide is it's okay to fail and to make mistakes and to admit those mistakes to those around you mm-hmm. so that you change and become stronger. So I remember the second year at Rappaport Academy, the teachers always asked each year and continued after that to ask, what could I do differently to be a better
it's a fair question.
School leader
yeah.
for you? And a group of teachers actually came to me and said, you flunk, Grayson, because you don't like conflict. And when you don't present conflict, we don't learn.
There you go.
And I had to teach myself
how to
move beyond the comfort zone of being so nice to everyone. Of course, now everyone who's listening is saying, Grayson was ever really nice to everyone? But that's okay.
That's
you
true.
Have to do what you need to do to get the goal that you're trying to achieve. So it's about choosing your style mm-hmm. based on the group that you're working with or the goal or end goal that you're after.
So would you call that one of the hardest decisions that you've ever had to make?
Or I think I stumbled into it along the way.
Okay.
And my style of leadership is very different. It is not at all about power. It is about investment,
okay.
investing others in the passion, in the integrity of what you are doing,
mm-hmm.
and having them become part of the goal and the process to the goal. And so I believe in team leadership.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm the leader. I think I'm just part of the team that helps to make sure we're guided in the right direction. So it's very different. Very different for me.
That's great. That's great. Where do you, have ideas all the time?
I do.
You do. So tell me, for you or for anyone else, where do great ideas come from?
I have no idea. Well, let me back up. I think there probably is a real good basis for the ideas. And I get my best ideas when I'm on a riding lawnmower.
Oh, really?
Yes, because it's extraordinarily noisy and no one can talk to me or interrupt me. Or I'm weeding the flower beds late in the evening when no one's around. And so I am totally absorbed in a physical activity.
So it's about focus?
And it frees my mind, yes, mm-hmm. to focus. And then I start thinking about problems.
Okay.
And then when I start thinking about problems, I think about how to solve those problems. And then these ideas just burst out. I have no other way of putting it. They're more like aha moments.
Okay.
I was, for an example, I was riding the mower one summer about 3 years ago when I thought about school. How could we increase learning time? Because that really is one of our major goals. And I thought, PE. Our students take PE every day. They're involved in activity. They're doing a great job of PE. But why is it not more of a learning adventure?
Okay.
So riding on my lawnmower, I outlined an entire PE approach where they learn science and math that leads into the activity they're doing.
Okay.
So it might be about resting heart rate versus active heart rate.
There you go.
It might be about body systems, what changes in your body if you're running laps. Well, you've got to talk about the circulatory system. And so I thought, why don't we teach PE that way? And then the outcome of that was unexpected. So our students began, instead of saying, how many more laps do I have to run? It was, do we get to run again tomorrow? Because then they became invested about their own health.
Right. Instead of
being dictated what they needed
right.
to do. You got to do this because it's on the agenda.
I've got
to
run 24 laps. Okay, fine.
Doesn't happen anymore.
Right.
So now they're learning science and math while they're in PE, which also invests them in continued good health.
That's tremendous.
But
that
I didn't know it was going to have that effect.
Sure.
I just thought it was worth trying.
Well, sure. Sure. That's great. What do you think is – what are the most important character traits that a leader exhibits?
I think compassion is essential. I think focus for the goal is important. I think leaders' number one task is to open their ears and close their mouths. So you listen more than you talk, and then you know where to go. I think that leaders must – have solid sense of integrity and who they are. And you don't compromise that. You just don't. And I think when leaders are about investing people in a positive goal and they have the integrity and they're willing to make decisions knowing they are also responsible for those decisions. Responsible.
They may not be popular.
May not be popular, but they also may not be right. And they have to be able to say, I wasn't right. Let's go another route. So I think good leadership is very thoughtful. It's not coincidental.
Okay. That's very poignant, and thank you for that. For those of you who are just joining us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Liz Taylor, and having a great conversation with Nancy Grayson. So let's keep going.
Okay.
Because I love it. I love what you're talking about here. We're talking about character traits, and what do you think we've talked about the great ones and the important ones. What are the threats? What's the greatest threat for a leader today?
Off track.
Getting off track?
I think when a leader loses focus or gets off track or becomes self-absorbed, and leaders need to realize it's not about them. It's never about them. It's about the goal or who you're working for or what you're working toward. Leaders get self-absorbed. I've seen it happen over time, and I think that is probably the biggest downfall and the biggest threat to significant and positive leadership.
That's great. That's great, and I've seen that as well, so I'm encouraged.
I would say one more thing
sure.
about threat to leadership or a downfall, and that is when the going gets tough, you have to keep going.
Because it is tough.
It is tough. It is difficult. People nowadays are using the word toxic. Mm-hmm. You know, well, I'm getting into a situation that's toxic. Then fix it. Don't walk out.
Right.
It's not okay to step into a position where you have responsibility and then back out. My family always taught me, if you do something, it deserves excellence.
Right.
When you finish the task, it deserves cleanup. So if you do those two things as a leader, you don't walk out because something isn't going the way you wish. You change the setting. You change
Sure.
the attitude. You change the approach. And you turn things around. I almost walked out of school. I have to admit, year three was disastrous for me as a leader at the school. And I thought, I don't need this. I don't have to do this. I don't need this. And then the family voices come in. And they say, no, excellence. And don't quit.
And you're glad you did.
I'm so glad I did, and I've learned so much.
We're very glad you didn't.
I have learned more than a student has learned during those years. It's phenomenal.
And more chapters to go.
And more chapters to go. Many more.
What do you see, because since we're in, you opened this, in your field in education and what you have committed your life to, for the most part of what you've committed your life to, what do you see for the future that must be addressed?
Standards and excellence.
Okay.
I hear excuses. It doesn't matter whether I'm in Kentucky or whether I'm in Dallas. I hear excuses about why it can't be done.
Oh, wow.
But there are processes that we know through research that actually work. And we use those processes at Rappaport Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, well, yes, but. No, there are no buts and there are no howevers. There are standards you set and you help students rise to those standards. You don't lower the standards because of different pathways students have had before they get to you. You instead say, here are the standards that will help you be successful. Let me help you reach the standards. So you never lower them. If you lower the standards for a student or a teacher, what you're telling them is that they are less than.
Mm-hmm.
We must never tell people that they are less than.
That's
so,
very true.
I think if we don't get a handle on the standards and the expectations, and keep them high, our destiny is not a good one in the U.S.
Yeah.
Education is the answer.
Absolutely.
To almost all the problems that we have. And yet we're not utilizing that tool.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah, it definitely is scary. Well, then that leads into what are the greatest leadership needs in Waco, in Central Texas? What do you think?
In the field of education or?
Just leadership.
Leadership.
What, if you could wave your magic wand.
I would say we would have leaders who come in who listen
mm-hmm.
and evaluate. I rarely hear leaders in Waco say they made a mistake or they're wrong. And I think that's a very powerful statement. I think we all need to be able to say there are better ways to do it, and the only way to find out is to make a mistake.
Mm-hmm. That's how we grow.
Yes, and I think leadership is about teamwork and collaboration. And that word floats around all the time.
Sure it does.
It does. And we give credence to other groups in a way that says we are willing to collaborate. But actually seeing people sit at the table and produce together is very rare.
Right. Willing to collaborate doesn't mean collaboration.
No, it does not. And I hear a lot of people talking about leadership and talking about doing, but I don't see as many people doing as need to do.
Very good point. So you have interaction, have had a career of interaction with young people.
Yes.
And I know you're embarking on some new adventures.
Yes.
We'll talk about those in a second.
Mm-hmm.
But what... and this may come right out of a classroom, I don't know,
okay.
But what advice would you have for young people or new leaders, either already in the community or those that are still in school looking for, what do I want to be?
What do I want to be? If I could impart to young people something that I feel like is really important, it would be to tell them you're not entitled. You're not. You earn your way. You learn your way, you work your way, and that is what you are entitled to, the opportunity to become. Uh-huh. You are not entitled to anything else. You have your name to protect, and you have your learning to absorb, and that is a golden opportunity, regardless of whether it's on the streets learning, in the book learning, learning by watching others who are leading. And then I would say we must not forget to teach our young people the value of civic responsibility. You know, people talk about civics,
mm-hmm.
but civic responsibility is what keeps us a healthy community.
Yes.
From someone who throws trash out their car window, they are not exhibiting civic responsibility.
No.
To those who have the potential for leadership but will not realize that potential.
They don't rise to it.
That is not civic responsibility.
That's
either.
True.
So we need the glue, and the glue comes from civics.
That's tremendous. That's tremendous. So talking about moving on to next chapters, you have some exciting next chapter going, already started.
I do. My kitchen is buzzing with treats in it all the time.
What do you hope to find?
Much to my husband's dismay. The next chapter is really about community development and economic development, and I needed a venue for that in East Waco. I want to help the community, not as someone who rides in on a white horse and says, let me help you.
Oh, it's going to be a
That is faulty.
It's going to be a lawnmower.
It's going to be, I'm riding my lawnmower down Elm. I'm sure Brent Stroman is riding behind me, ready to write me a ticket. But the goal is to provide a place where the community gathers, where people want to come from everywhere and gather. Mm-hmm. And then also to stimulate more economic development in East Waco, which is a precious community.
Absolutely.
And I mean that in the true sense of precious. Having been in that community for nearly 15 years, almost 16, I feel so grounded in East Waco, and I want to give back by helping to develop. So I'm opening a bakery and coffee shop where people will gather. There's no drive-through window. And I will be glad to give anyone a map to a drive-through window if they need it. But it's for gathering and experiencing.
It's for getting out of your car.
And being together. And playing dominoes, playing checkers, drinking coffee, eating pie.
I love it. I love it. And I can't wait till
Lula Jane's.
Lula Jane's.
Lula
I can't
Jane's.
Wait till it's a reality, mm-hmm. and I know it's coming along.
It is.
So that's very exciting.
And Lula Jane was my grandmother.
Yes. It was a family
connection. A funky lady who bobbed her hair, first one in town in Mississippi.
I love it. I love it. Well, for those of you who are joining us, this is KWBU Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Liz Taylor, and I've been enjoying my conversation with Nancy Grayson, and we've been talking about leadership and just the qualities of being in a community where that's valued.
Well, and it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being here, and good luck going forward. And,
well, come have pie.
I would love to have pie and coffee.
And we'll talk more.
And we'll talk more. Thank you.
You're welcome.
This program was taped May 22nd, 2012, in the studios of KWBU.